behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, a regularly scheduled guest is not going to be here this afternoon, so we're going to have open lines. Supposedly, we were going to have somebody's supposed to be calling in from New York, and if they get here, why, we'll be talking with them. There's a conference back there. If not, why, we will be opening our lines and let you talk about some of the things that you'd like to talk about this afternoon. So right now we're waiting. There's a big meeting of evangelical leaders back in New York, people from Lebanon and people from the Coptic Christians and people from the Syrian Christian Church, and they were supposed to be calling us, but we have Mr. Eater or Barsu is going to be coming on in just a moment, and hopefully he is going to bring us abreast of what's happening in the Near East. You know, this is a very uncertain place, the tragedy of what's happened in Lebanon. Lebanon was once the Switzerland of the Near East. It was the banking center there. The Christians and the Muslims lived comfortably together, about 50-50 there. There was no animosity between the Muslims and the Christians. It wasn't until our government intentionally created this animosity we got into the problems where we are today. And it really all began back well about 1979, when we intentionally overthrew our friend the Shah of Iran and put in power the radical Islamists, then precipitated the war in Afghanistan and used that to begin to rekindle this terrible, terrible radical form of Islam that approves of hatred and approves of killing and dying for Allah, and of course this whole idea of jihad. Had it not been for American interference in the affairs of the Middle East, we would not be in the problems where we are today. The reason, of course, that the Muslims attacked us was not because we're free, not because we're democratic, but because we were occupying the Holy Land of Mecca, this area surrounding Mecca and Medina, and we did this intentionally to inflame the Islamic radicals there so that we could once again have World War III. This has been planned for a long time. And may God have mercy on us. Well, right now we have on the line a gentleman named Peter Barsu. Thank you so very much for being with us, Peter.
Thank you.
Tell us what's going on in the Middle East.
Well, I'm here in Washington, D.C. There's a very large convention, the largest gathering of Middle Eastern Christians have come together to express their support for bringing democracy and freedom to the Middle East and changing the totalitarian and autocratic regimes that are there.
All right, fine. But of course, at the present time, why it just seems the American government is supporting the autocratic regime in Pakistan and the autocratic regime in Saudi Arabia and the autocratic regime in Kuwait and Qatar and in so many of these other countries. How are we going to change those regimes and bring freedom to the people? And does the average Muslim want a Western form of democracy?
Well, I think the average Muslim wants to participate in his government more than he is allowed now. There's really no participation right now. That's why the general population feels disenfranchised, and they revert to this to extreme forms of behavior like militarism and Islamic fundamentalism. If there's more participation allowed in their countries, in the affairs of their countries, in the ruling of their countries, then they wouldn't do all these terrible things that they're doing.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment, and we'll sort of explore these ideas and what can be done. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. With us on the line from Washington, D.C., there is Peter Abessou, and he is attending a meeting in Washington, D.C., of Christians from all over the Middle East, from many, many branches of Christendom in Lebanon, the Coptic Christians, the Syrian Christians. So how many groups really are there, and who is really sponsoring this meeting that you're attending?
The meeting was sponsored by the Lebanese Christians, by the Coptics of Egypt, and by the Assyrians. Those are the three principal sponsors of this conference.
All right, fine. And, of course, what do you hope that to really accomplish? How can we bring peace to the Middle East?
We hope to educate the American public that, first of all, 77% of Middle Easterners in America are Christians, and 80% of them, or 70% of 77% at least, are not Arabs. They are Copts or Assyrians or Maronites, the Christians of Lebanon. And we hope to tell the American public that these communities, these minority communities, have to be protected, because if they are cleared out of the Middle East, then that will only leave the radicals in place. They are a moderating factor in the countries in which they live. They are a conduit of reforms that can be brought into the area and to bring the area up to 21st century standards of government.
Well, now, Peter, are you from Syria? Are you from Lebanon? Where are you from?
I am, sir, an Assyrian. I was born in Iraq.
I see. Okay. And, of course, the Iraqi Christians, the Christian component there, the Assyrian Christians in Iraq, are certainly really one of the most discriminated against groups in there, at least right today, aren't they?
That is true, sir. I mean, just in the past 2 weeks, there have been 5 acts of violence, and 15 people have been killed. And, of course, there's no legal recourse for these people. They are Christians who are under Islamic State's second-class citizens with very little recourse on their hands.
Well, now, what sort of how did they exist under Saddam Hussein? Were things pretty bad there, or did they have equal rights to other people?
Well, under Saddam, they were actually safer in the sense that there wasn't any violence directed against them that was religious-based, because Saddam just oppressed everyone, including Muslims.
Right, and so it was a secular state, and he was an autocratic ruler. He didn't persecute the Christians. He just maintained an iron control over the people. So what's happened since Saddam Hussein, since there's been a breakdown of the structure of law and order there as far as the Christians are concerning? Are they coming under increasing persecution from the Sunni Muslims in the areas they live in?
Yes, sir, I would have to say they are. Of course, we are aware of it. 6 churches that were bombed on August 1st. Since that day, it's only been a month or slightly more, 40,000 are estimated to have left the country. They don't feel safe in the country. They are the predominant owners of liquor stores, for example. It is legal to sell alcohol in Iraq, but very few Muslims do it. Yet 1,000 Assyrian-owned liquor stores have been bombed, or I haven't heard of a case of a Muslim liquor store having been bombed. So they are targeted simply because they are Christians.
And so there's an organized discrimination against Christians in this Muslim country.
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. Well, of course, is there any way, of course, you're ever going to be able to establish a, if you have a democratic vote, one man, one vote in Iraq, won't the Sunni Muslims take control?
Well, if they buy the idea into the idea of democracy, then they have to accept that democracies must protect their minorities. It is the rule of the majority, but the majority must protect minorities, else it's not a democracy. Yeah. And that is what we hope that this administration and U.S. national policy will do in the Middle East.
Well, then this is more of a course of a republic, because under democracy it's majority rule. Under a republic, at least by our definition of it, why, of course, you have a rule by law, not simply rule by the desire of the majority. And the tragedy is right now in Iraq, why over 60% of the people are Shia Muslims, aren't they?
Yes, that's correct.
So really, we have to establish a government where people do have rights. And it's going to be, I don't know how they're ever going to get around this, because the Sunnis, pardon me, certainly want to have their state and their control. The Shias, who are the vast majority, want to be in control. And, of course, the Christians are certainly in a position of just being totally vulnerable. You know, you say over 1,000 of their shops have been destroyed. And how many of their churches were bombed here in August?
Six. And of course, in one day.
Right. And, of course, then there's an organized anti-Christian movement there in Iraq today.
Yes.
What about in Syria? How are the Christians treated in Syria today?
They're not subject to the same level of violence because there's state control. There's a state security apparatus. But still, it is, when all is said and done, it is a Muslim state. And their civil rights are certainly not acknowledged. And it's very difficult for Christians to, you know, succeed, to be in government posts, be in ministerial positions, etc.
All right. What about, do they have to pay extra taxes? Because I know that was one of the things in a Muslim state, that Christians were second-class citizens, and they, both the Christians and the Jews, had to pay a higher tax rate than others. Is that true in Syria?
That is true under Muslim law, but it is not applied in Syria, or it was not applied in Iraq. But if you have a purely Islamic state, they would apply that, certainly.
All right, well, what about in Lebanon? What's life like in Lebanon today?
Lebanon is has a sizable Christian minority that's very powerful, the Maronites. There's 1.5 million of them there. And it is a very secular state in that respect. You are free to worship and free to do whatever you want. So it's not that bad, Lebanon. Of course, it's being occupied by Syria at the for the past 20 years, basically. And that has to end.
Well, now, my understanding is that, you know, before that, really, Lebanon was a wonderful country. Some people refer to it as the Switzerland of the Near East. Is that true?
That is true. I actually lived there for 1 year in 1974 as I was immigrating to America. It's a beautiful country. It was very very vibrant. It was tolerant. And then the Civil War basically ruined much of it.
But, of course, who was responsible for that terrible Civil War?
Well, I think the Palestinians were.
The Palestinians. The Liberation Army came in to use that as a base, and then the Israelis came in, and then the Syrians came in, certainly sort of like when that old adage, when elephants fight, why, it's the grass that gets trampled, and the grass is the people of Lebanon.
Yes, sir.
Well, of course, what can be done, though? I mean, here we have people, very, very good people, even the Coptic Christians in Egypt really are under terrible persecution, aren't they?
Yes, they are. There's about 11 to 13 million of them. And to give you an example how bad it is, if you want to build a church in Egypt, President Mubarak himself must sign the permit. You are not allowed to build a church unless you get a signature from President Mubarak himself.
Well, will he sign a permit so that you can build a church?
Well, you can imagine the bureaucracy, sir. It takes about 20 years, I'm told by my Coptic friends, to get a church built in Egypt.
Well, of course, America is one of the major financiers of this government, which seems so really not very friendly to Christians.
That is true, yes. But that is the politics of the geopolitics that has to be played. So I don't know how to answer that, but yes, that is true.
Well, what do you hope to accomplish, and what can our listeners do to help you?
Well, they can be cognizant of the fact that Middle Eastern Christians are not fundamentalist. The overwhelming majority of them are Christians. I'm talking Middle Eastern Christians in America, Middle Eastern people in America. They support bringing democracy and freedom in the Middle East. They support the U.S. policies there, and they stand behind this government.
And you're talking now about, of course, a certain number of the people from Palestine are Christians. The Arabs from Palestine are Christians. And so there really is, we always think of Arabs as being Muslims, but there are a fair number of them. What, about 10% that are Christians? What would be the percentage be?
Well, in Palestine?
Right.
About 50% of Jerusalem, I'm forgetting the name of the town now. Sorry.
Well, it used to be very high in Bethlehem, but I don't think they've driven all the Arab Christians out of there.
Exactly. It's gone down, it was 50%, it's gone down to 2%.
Right.
At the moment.
So, you know, these really are the people that are so tragic because, I mean, everybody is against them, really. The Christian Arab, you know, who wants to be faithful to his beliefs, but, of course, he's not welcomed by the Jews and he's not welcomed by the Arabs. So a lot of them have actually fled and come to the United States, haven't they?
That's true. And actually, the PLO, which is dominated by Muslims, exerts tremendous pressure on the Christian Palestinians and makes their life miserable. This is a little known fact. So even by their own brethren, they are not treated well.
Well, of course, anybody in Palestine who wants to get along and live in peace with the Jews, you know, is subject to persecution and may very well be simply killed. I mean, they do not tolerate dissent within the Palestinian framework, do they?
Not as far as I know. I'm not an expert on it, sir, but that appears to be the case.
Well, now, of course, are you living in the United States today? Are the people attending your conference primarily Arabs or Middle Easterners who are living in the United States, or are people coming from the Middle East to this meeting?
Yes, and this is one point we are stressing. They are not Arabs, sir. They are Maronites, they are Copts, and they are Assyrians. They are ethnically distinct from Arabs.
All right.
And this is one of the key things we like to stress with this very large convention.
Well, of course, there in Lebanon, weren't there certainly a certain number of the Christians there, Greek Orthodox or Catholic?
Yes.
Now, are Maronites a form of a Catholic, or what is their relationship?
They are Roman Catholics.
Yes. They're Roman Catholics.
They're okay. Uniates, as technically speaking.
All right, fine. Of course, you know, for those of us who live here in the United States, we're really not acquainted with, you know, the structure is over there.
Yeah.
Now, what then can you accomplish as a meeting with representatives from the Middle East and probably some representatives from here in the United States, other than to try to educate the American people about the structure of the Christians over there? But, you know, it seems that we seem to be going from bad to worse as far as our involvement in Iraq, and the tempo of violence is increasing. The English couldn't subdue Afghanistan. Afghanistan is still seething. We keep talking about elections, but you know, the only place that's really under control is the city of Kabul, and the English couldn't subdue Afghanistan. In fact, nobody since Alexander the Great has subdued Afghanistan. Are we going to be able to accomplish anything there, America?
That is the hope, sir. The hope of going into Afghanistan and going into Iraq is to seed the ideas of democracy, particularly in Iraq. Iraq is the cultural focal point of the Middle East, and from there, you can export the ideas of freedom and democracy and equal participation in government so that the whole area can become more moderate. It won't resort to these extreme religious views and ideas.
Well, of course, you know, of course, the ideas of freedom, as we know it here in the United States, came out of the Christian religion. And, of course, our very form of government was based upon those concepts that were written by John Locke, this idea that there is a nature, God, there is a nature's law, men are entitled to life, liberty, and property. And it was those ideas that were enshrined in our Declaration of Independence, with a stipulation that governments are created among men to protect those God-given rights that were laid out in our Declaration of Independence. But is there any similar culture within the Muslim areas? Do they understand freedom as we know it here?
In Christianity, there's a distinction between things that are Caesar's and things that are God's. But there's no such distinction in Islam. In Islam, no civil law can supersede the Sharia or the religious law. So the state, purely speaking, is a Muslim state, and its Muslim laws apply to all its citizens.
All right, fine. Now we're going to be back here in just a moment. We're going to have to take a break, Peter. Just hang around here. And then when we get back, if anybody's out there in the listening audience would like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991. It tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine, but those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Peter Basso, and we're talking... am I pronouncing your name correctly, Peter?
It's actually Bet Basso.
How do you pronounce it?
Bet Basso.
Bet Basso. All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, we're talking about the how different the Muslim culture is than the Christian culture, because, of course, the American concept of freedom, the British concept of freedom, upon which our concepts were built, really came out of the Christian faith and these ideas that men wanted to be free, and, of course, that you would not have a religious state at all. You would have try to have honorable people in positions of government so that you could have a free society, but we were never to be a theocracy as such. It was that men individually to be ruled by God, and these men who feared God would be good leaders. Now, that is totally contrary to the Muslim belief, isn't it?
Yes, because, as I said, the religious law cannot be superseded by civil law. So, ultimately, it becomes the authority, and the religious law is derived from the Quran. It is specified by the Quran itself. So, Islam is a nation. So you are a member of this nation regardless of your ethnic background. That is how it works out.
And, of course, you could be in Iraq, or you could be in Iran, or you could be in Qatar, or you could be in Saudi Arabia. You would still be part of this nation as such that you're speaking of, this theoretical nation under Allah, where Sharia law then is the framework basis of government law?
Yes.
All right, well, then, how can, to me, the only way, of course, to change what's going on in the Middle East would be to spread the Christian faith. But, of course, if a Muslim were to convert to Christianity, why, of course, he would be killed. Whereas if a Christian were to convert to the Muslim faith, why, we wouldn't do anything to them. That seems to be not a very fair playing field at all.
That is true. The punishment for apostasy for Muslim is death.
Now that's really doesn't give you much freedom or much leeway, does it? In fact, this is such an oppressive, terrible, in my estimation, terrible religion, because you will be killed in a Muslim state if you were to convert to another religion or to renounce your faith. That certainly doesn't mean that you believe in it. You're kept there really by fear, aren't you?
Yes, and the change can come from Muslims willing to cast aside some of these beliefs, and saying, from this point forward, we choose not to emphasize them, or we don't acknowledge them, because we want a more moderate Islam. We want an Islam where the relationship becomes between the individual and God himself. The change it can come from within Muslims, but I've met many Muslims here who are attending this conference who are pushing for this very idea. But it's a slow process. It'll take years, generations. Accomplish.
Now, you say that at this conference you're attending in Washington, D.C., there are actually moderate Muslims there who would like to see these changes. I mean, they're not coming at it from a Christian point of view. They just want a more moderate Muslim state?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there was a Muslim from Darfur, where the genocide is going on, and he's lamenting that it is Muslims who are killing him, even though he's a Muslim.
I know. This is the most amazing thing that, you know, in the eastern part, where we had the Muslims killing the Christians. Now in the western part of the Sudan, we have the Muslims killing the Muslims. Because why are they killing the Muslims there? Is it because they have a different outlook, because they have rejected these concepts of jihad? What is the basis of the militias going there? And they've slaughtered, 50, 60,000 people so far? And, of course, a million have been displaced. Of course, we don't want to get involved there. We seem to think that we're really, well, we'll give them a little food or something of the sort. But even though it's genocide, we're not going to take a stand there.
The reason it's happening in Darfur, sir, is racial. Because the Darfur residents are African. They're not Arabs. And the people who are doing the killing, the Janjaweeds, are actually Arabs. So in that case, it's a racial issue. The same thing is happening in Mauritania, where Muslims are being captured and sold into slavery, African Muslims, by the Arabs who are ruling there. So in that particular case, it is a racial issue. But in the south part of Sudan, which is mostly Christian and animist, it becomes a religious issue, where it is the fundamentalist government of Khartoum is pushing the Janjaweed to persecute and commit genocide against the Christians and the animists.
Well, has that pretty well been solved? My understanding is that there was a ceasefire there, and they were going to share the oil revenues and try to work out some sort of agreement between the Christians and South and the Muslim North. Do you have any idea what's going on over there?
Well, there was a speaker. I just heard from him half an hour ago from the south of Sudan, and he said the government is not serious about committing to those seven-point peace protocol that was submitted.
All right,
they're not really following it.
You hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Of course, America could force. We could put an embargo on them. We could bring sanctions. We wouldn't want to do anything, though, after all. We wouldn't want to offend our good friends, the Chinese communists, who are financing the genocide.
Yes.
Help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Carr's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Carr's book, Inroad to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr.
Hi, my name is Michael Anthony Perugia, and I approved this ad. I'm seeking the presidential nomination of the Constitution Party, and one of the reasons I'm running is to put the interest of American workers first, which President Bush is not doing. Mr. Bush has advocated an immigration plan that would let millions of illegal aliens stay in our country, and the chairman of his Council of Economic Advisors has praised what is called outsourcing, which will send millions of American jobs overseas. In other words, Mr. Bush is importing illegal cheap labor and exporting good-paying jobs that should stay in America. Well, this makes no sense. Such policies are outrageous at a time when so many Americans are looking for jobs and want to work. The sad fact is that neither the Republicans nor the Democrats are looking out for American workers first. As president, I would put our people first. I hope you'll look at my webpage, Perutka2004.com, that's P-E-R-O-U-T-K-A-2004.com, and remember, you never waste your vote when you vote for what's right.
Authorized and paid for by Perutka 2004.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is attending a conference of Christians and some moderate Muslims in Washington, D.C., a fairly large conference. And we've got Mike calling us from Arizona. Hi, Mike. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, Dr. Stan, I think what's going on in Sudan is a real tragedy, and we're getting such a distorted picture consistently from the press I think most of us, people who tune into your show, know that the press is not to be relied upon. In southern Sudan, for years, they've had a communist insurgent coming out of Kenya, led by John Garang, who now claims he's no longer a communist, but as far as I'm concerned, once a communist, always a communist. And there was a good article out of the Toronto paper, I think it was Toronto Sun, or I can't remember what their paper is called up there, but the guy explained what's really going on in Darfur. You have the CIA stirring up insurgents and funding and training insurgents out of Chad going into Western Sudan, and the militia there are simply to counter the insurgency, the CIA-led insurgency coming out of Chad.
Well, an awful lot of innocent people are getting slaughtered over
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely, and both of these regions are of interest
to
the globalists because of oil.
Okay, fine. Would you mind just getting that that clipping and ship it to me along with a specific date and time? But thank you so much for calling, and let's go to Dave, who's calling from Illinois. Dave, do you have a question for our guest?
A combination, actually. First of all, good evening. As you both know, this war in Iraq, the Bush administration hopes to democratize Iraq. Well, from your guest comments, confirmed to me that that's just not going to happen.
Well,
and I just wonder if he agrees with that.
All right, let's talk to Peter, our guest from Illinois, David says that he doesn't see how, you know, with the Muslim faith as we've described, that we'll be able to bring true democracy, a representative government to Iraq. You feel that we will be able to? Is that, do you feel that we're going to have to or continue with exactly what we're doing and try to democratize Iraq?
Yes, I think we must. It's a very long-term plan. I was told personally by a State Department official before the war started, this is a 50-year policy that the U.S. will follow.
I mean, but are we going to, America, going to keep troops there for 50 years, long after most of us are dead?
Yes, because it takes two generations to transform that kind of area.
But I don't think the average American really wants to be at war for 50 years.
Well, not so much war, but remember, the containment policy against the Soviet Union lasted for about 50 years, maybe more, the Cold War policy. This is a containment policy against radical Islam, and it takes a long time to bring about change. It can happen. There are Muslims who don't want to be under the rule of theocrats, who want more freedoms, who want more participation in government, and we have to give them a chance and to allow them to effect change from within their own communities. We have to support them.
All right, fine. Let's get Dave. Did you have any other parting comment before we let you go?
Well, yeah. I just think it's there's no way. His 50 years. You're talking 60 administrations. It's just going to fall apart.
I think that there, some of the American people eventually are going to become rather disillusioned, especially if this bankrupts our society. And we're already a bankrupt society economically. I'm afraid we'd be bankrupt morally. And I mean, it's a wonderful idea. It's a wonderful dream. But do the American people really believe, the American people really know that there's a 50-year plan? Peter, what do you think about that? Do you think that the American people are going to support a 50-year war over there?
No way.
I wouldn't characterize it as a war, sir. It's a policy.
Maybe an occupation, then?
An occupation, and that occupation may not last for 50 years, but the policy will. Once Iraq is stable enough, once the government can secure its own borders, then we can withdraw our forces or scale them back considerably. But it must be done, because the consequences of not doing so will be more tragic than 9/11.
Well, now what about Iran? Because certainly Iran is a much more brutal, in many respects, theocracy than Iraq was. It's just equally, and it is a theocracy. In other words, that is just totally a Sharia law, at least in Iraq, as tyrannical as it was, you did not have Sharia law in force. So what did the State Department tell you about Iran?
Nothing. We did not discuss Iran.
All right, fine. But they're talking about at least a 50-year policy for America, commitment for that long.
It's a policy to transform the entire region, sir. Remove all the corrupt regimes, install democratic regimes, and let the people participate in their own self-government.
All right, fine. Thank you very much for calling, Dave. I appreciate it.
I need a pipe dream.
All right, thanks for calling.
Yep.
All right, fine. All right, fine. Well, that was Dave. Go ahead, Peter.
Dr. Shen, I must tell you that I have to attend the function in about 5 minutes.
All right,
fine. I cannot stay for much longer.
All right, well, why don't you just go ahead and tell us the message you would really like to get out to the American people, because we have listeners all across this country. So what is the message that you would like to get out and that you'd like people to get from this conference?
The message is, on behalf of the Assyrians, Maronites, and Copts, that those indigenous Christian populations of the Middle East must be protected, because they are the moderating factors. They are the conduits of ideas of freedom and women's rights and equality and of self-government in the Middle East, if these populations are allowed to leave the Middle East, then the Middle East will just become worse for it. So we would like to tell the American people that the overwhelming majority of Middle Easterners in America are Christians, and they support the idea of bringing a democracy and freedom to the Middle East for the safety of America and also for the safety of their own communities in that area.
Okay. Do you have a website or anything of that sort that people could contact you with, or organizations?
Yes, I actually, they can go to www.ainanancy.org. This is the Assyrian International News Agency, and there's a wealth of information there.
All right. Now, do you actually have an organization as such of Christians, of Assyrian Christians? And do you actually live in whereabouts do you live?
I'm from Chicago, sir.
I see. So you're living here in this country. Yeah. And, of course, there is a group of, I know, of a fairly strong contingent of Assyrian Christians here in the United States, isn't there?
There's 400,000 Assyrians in the United States.
How
They're
many?
Also known 400,000.
400,000 Assyrians. And these are people who've really fled from that area to try to get away from persecution and a better life?
That's right. As a matter of fact, 90% of Iraqis in this country are Assyrians.
All right.
Simply because they fled the Muslim persecution. Assyrians are also known as Chaldeans or Syriacs. Those are different denominational names for the same ethnic group.
All right, fine. How many, of course, are there still in Iraq? How many Assyrians would there be in Iraq? How many Assyrian Christians would there be in Syria today?
There are an estimated 1.5 to 2 million Assyrians in Iraq. There are about 700,000 Assyrians in Syria, and about 25,000 in Turkey and 50,000 in Iran.
All right, fine. And, of course, what about Lebanon?
Lebanon, there are 1.5 million Maronites.
All right, so you would separate the Maronites then from the Assyrians, from the Assyrian Christians.
Yes, although they have a genetic relationship, and now they're just considered two different people, but they are very closely allied.
Would this be more or less a traditional Roman Catholic or Greek Orthodox Catholic? Where would they fit into the spectrum?
The Maronites?
The Maronites are Roman Catholics, aren't they?
Yes, Assyrians are Roman Catholics, are Orthodox, and are also their own church, the Assyrian Church of the East, also called Nestorians sometimes. That is actually the oldest church in the world. It was founded by Thomas in 33 A.D.
So
it's one of the four apostolic churches.
And I think many people have forgotten it. You know, there's Ethiopian Christians and the Coptic Christians and then the Syrian Christians and of course, then the Greek Orthodox and the Romans.
Yes.
So there are many, 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 many branches, but they're all basically Christian in their belief.
Exactly, yes.
All right, fine. Well, I really want to thank you so very, very much for being with us today. And do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
I appreciate you having me on, Dr. Stan, and I want the listeners to be support the idea of freedom and democracy in the Middle East, because those people deserve that kind of life that we have here. We take it for granted here, but over there, people are constantly living under the thumb of autocrats and theocrats, and they deserve a better life.
All right, well, fine. I certainly very much appreciate your being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us. Okay, fine. Well, this is a representative from this meeting that's going on in Washington, D.C. today. So if you're out there in the listening audience, you agree, you disagree, you have a comment, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Pardon me, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we'd love to get your thoughts on this subject. But, of course, I think that you got the basic theme. Dave brought this out from Illinois. We're talking about a 50-year program. Now, the president is not telling the American people, I don't think, very forthrightly what the plan is. Senator Kerry knows what the plan is, but neither one of them are going to tell the American people. If you want to know the plan, why, it's up on the Project for the New American Century website in a booklet. It's about a 90-100-page book called Rebuilding America's Defenses. And really, this is the master plan, but the American people aren't well, the elite don't think we're really smart enough to appreciate how smart they are. But they have a plan. They have a master plan. Their website is newamericancentury.org. That's newamericancentury.org. And if you go up on their website, you'll find out that there's this little group of people, about 25 of them, who took over control of the American government. In 1997, they created an organization. The purpose of the organization was to create a new international system that would benefit our prosperity, our security, and our values. And, of course, then if you, of course, go into this and you find in 1998 why, of course, they were writing a letter to President Clinton saying we had to go to war with Iraq. And the year 2000, they were writing a letter to President Clinton saying we had to go to war with Iraq. Who were these people? Why, they were Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney. Remember, there were only 25 of them. Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, John Bolton, Elliot Abrams, Mr. Liddy, who's chief of staff for... Cheney, of course, there's Frank Gaffney, there's Gary Bauer, and of course, they, of course, William Bennett there to get the Christians in behind this program, and they're propagandizing the Christian element to go along with this program. But the real program, it's all laid out in Rebuilding America's Defenses. You'll actually get all sorts of details on this if you get our syllabus entitled Iraq, the Untold Story. And of course, if you get the syllabus that goes along with that, you'll actually get all the documents off of their website and my letters, which tell you exactly where to find what they're really talking about. But they were talking at that time, I think it was written in the year 2000, that we were going to need a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor to bring this about. And oh shucks, wasn't it convenient we had a catalyzing and catastrophic event on the 11th of September, and we've undertaken this whole program. John is calling from Missouri. Hi, John. Do you have a question? John, or is this Roger? Who's there?
John.
This is John. Go ahead, John.
Oh, hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I had some bad reception, so I missed a little bit of the start of your show with Mr. Cohen an hour ago. And what I wanted to know was this. If you could just tell me what he said. He mentioned an organization, I believe it was called the Priory of Zion.
Right.
And you were talking about a book, The Prodigals of the Elder Brothers of Zion.
Right.
And I missed all that. That's that one little section in there. Can you tell me how the book, The Prodigals of the Elder Brothers of Zion, which we're told is a book about a Jewish conspiracy to take over the world, can you tell me what that book really, where it really came from, what this priority of Zion is?
Well, what,
obviously,
don't
guys dispelled that notion completely.
All right, fine. The Priory of Zion is entitled different than the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion appeared mysteriously in Russia in 1905, and, of course, then they given to the Tsar, and it said there's a Jewish conspiracy, we're going to overthrow the world, and it laid out the blueprint for everything that's happened. The Tsar was taken in by this. He, of course, then turned against the Jews, who were a very significant force in his society, allowed the pogroms to be taken, which inflamed the Jewry throughout the world against the Tsar, and played a large part in the overthrow of the Tsar's regime. But the thing is that the protocols were not written by a Jewish conspiracy. I believe that they were written by the Luciferians. I believe that they were written by people associated with this whole Luciferian movement, and this is covered in a number of books. The Occult Conspiracy and Occult Hierarchy by a fellow named Webb, who died mysteriously after he wrote the books. You'll also find this covered in a book called War for Genocide by Norman Cohn. What was so interesting about the protocols was that in my research at Colonel House's papers at Yale University, I found a complete translation of the protocols, but an entirely different translation than, of course, any that are available in the United States. So Colonel House was deeply involved in the occult. He left that there. He just loved to leave clues for researchers to uncover, but nobody else has ever talked about the fact that it's there. I suspect, remember, Colonel House was living during that era, and I suspect that he was very close to the people who wrote the protocols. And, of course, it is simply a smokescreen to take you away from the real Luciferian conspiracy that we're up against today. That's the background. The Priory of Zion is described in a book called Holy Blood and Holy Grail that came out in the early 1980s. And I was asking Tim if he had found any references to it before that. He says that he has, and I haven't had a chance really to go into that documentation. But the book Holy Blood, Holy Grail, I think, is another smokescreen to take us off the track and get us, of course, looking and focusing on the wrong enemy. But there's no question that the Templars, certainly formed in, I believe, 1108, something like that, were an important part of this whole a world conspiracy, this beginning of international banking as we know it, and carried forward to international banking today, was just financing the whole world revolution and the wars and, of course, so much of what's going on today. But that's a whole different subject. We're just about out of time.
Okay. I thought you folks did definitely make a connection, though, between that book and the Priory of Zion.
Tim did. I don't necessarily. Okay. God bless.
Thanks, sir.
So very much. We've got Roger for just a moment. Roger, we're just about out of time. Quick question or comment?
Yeah, when I was to leave you with this, it'd be worth $1 million just to know who cooked up the protocols, as I'm sure they were cooked up rather than indigenous to a particular Jew.
I think we can, if we go into the background of Theosophy and the followers of Madame Blavatsky, I think we'll be very close to this. I think it came out of the Theosophists.
God bless.
Okay. And, of course, we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable. But the regular sources, call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to tell you about the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. This is a wonderful means of teaching your children at home and getting them out of government schools. The Robinson Homeschool Curriculum is designed to give excellence in education. It's a program. It's on 22 CDs. Designed to take your child from grammar school all the way through high school graduation, and it costs $199.95. You actually get the lesson plans, you get the tests, you get the answers to the tests, you get all of the textbooks except for the Saxon math textbooks, a wonderful way to educate your children. Let me recommend this to you. Dr. Robinson used this program on his own children. The Robinson Homeschool Program is available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And if you love your children, get them out of government school just as soon as possible. The Sanjian Company manufactures quality electronic products, so if you need a good shortwave radio, consider the Sanjian 505 AM-FM shortwave receiver. It comes with a 25-foot antenna, an AC adapter, a soft carrying case, and costs $149.95 plus shipping. You can read about the Sanjian 505 radio and some of the other great Sanjian products that we carry at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can order a Sanjian 505 radio by calling 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. Visit our website and consider purchasing a Christmas gift for a friend or someone you love. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there in the listening audience, we hope many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to finance doing what we do 5 hours every day. Someplace in America, we're heard on radio, 5 hours a day on the Internet, 4 hours a day on shortwave, and what a privilege it is to be able to bring people ideas and get them the information they're not going to get through the controlled media, because the media is controlled. In fact, that's part of the subject of my next newsletter, and if you'd like to get a free copy of our September newsletter, which is just off the press, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a copy. If you are, of course, living in the Monterey Bay area where I live, and you're interested in going to a meeting where you'll learn about the Constitution, let me remind you that there's Saturday programs for the next several weeks, and you'll learn more about it by calling 877-448-5798. That's 877-448-5798 to attend a three-hour course on the Institute of the Constitution and learn about the foundations of our freedom. And then let me, of course, remind you about the all-day session we're going to be having on the 6th of November. It's a Saturday on the north shore of Monterey Bay at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We're going to be bringing in outside speakers. We do hope many of you can come. And, of course, there's going to be lunch will be served. We'll start early in the morning. We'll have some exciting speakers. And you'll have a chance to reach people from across America who feel as you do that we really do have a serious problem in America. Earlier, I was, of course, if you want, to, of course, to make your reservations, and you're going to have reservations, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, because we need to know ahead of time how many people are coming. And then, of course, we mentioned earlier, if you really want to understand what's going on in Iraq, you need to understand the history of the wars of the last century. Our video, Iraq, the Untold Story, will give you the background of how we were manipulated into the Spanish-American War, and the government lied to us about the reason we were to go. We were manipulated into the First World War. 125,000 American boys died, and the government lied to us of the reasons we went into the war. We went into the Second World War because, of course, the attack on Pearl Harbor, but nobody ever tells you that we put an oil embargo on Japan so they would be forced to attack. What would happen if they put an oil embargo on the United States and we couldn't get oil anywhere in the world and we didn't have any? What do you think we would do? Exactly what the Japanese did. But we couldn't let the American people know that. And it was considered unpatriotic to talk about that during the war. After all, we had to support our boys. And then, of course, when the Germans wanted to surrender, we wouldn't let them. When the Japanese wanted to surrender, we wouldn't let them. And if you don't believe that, if you get this syllabus, well, you'll find the article we got from the Chicago Tribune in August of 1945. Pointing out the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months and we wouldn't let them. And I know it's true because I met with General Albert Wedemeyer, who headed the Chinese forces in Japan, pardon me, the Chinese forces in China during the Second World War. And he told me that the Japanese had been trying to surrender. He knew that. The American government knew that. But you see, we wouldn't have had Iwo Jima. We wouldn't have had Okinawa. We wouldn't have been able to drop the bombs on Hiroshima and kill 100,000 people, and drop it on Nagasaki and incinerate 100,000 people if we'd let the war end. So you have to understand there really are wicked and evil forces out there. Iraq, the Untold Story, the video, Iraq, the Untold Story, the syllabus. You should get the two together at a special decreased price, and then understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. And of course, you need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to pray for America. You need to pray for revival. Because if America doesn't turn back to God, is there any reason why God should ever again bless this country? And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.